So thanks for all coming. I'm Byron, and we'll be talking about the web today. This will be a different kind of session. It's going to be design, overview, some thoughts about community, our craft, and what we do. I won't be showing any code today, which I hope will help you from falling asleep and your eyes kind of roll back in your head. So we'll let some other people come in, and we'll get started. A great turnout. This is a great event. Are you all enjoying your Vegas experience? Good. Now, this is the type of setup, too. I can barely see you. I'm sure I look great, but I can barely see you. So I also like to keep it interactive, and if we have questions along the way, we've got mics, and certainly I'm here to have a conversation with you guys and talk. So we'll go ahead and get started. For you gadget geeks in the room, I've got an iPad 2 here set up with video mirroring. I'll be showing my desktop video and actually video. Pretty nice setup in full resolution as well. So that's pretty cool to be able to carry that. So if you want to talk to me afterwards, we can look at that too. All right. So we'll get started. So like I said, I'm Byron, and I'm a principal, author, and maker. I don't know if any of you have seen me speak before. I've been speaking, I think three times now. And before, we called it being a maker, really making stuff online, building things, and creating things, and that's what I've been doing for the past 10 years, and also had an agency for quite a few years as well. My agency is called Texture Design, and I also published some stuff and done a lot of work. This is the raw material of some products that I make that I have some samples for you, as well as some giveaways. And also, it's pretty dated now, but about three or four years ago, I wrote a book about blogging and social media, and one of the reasons I'm here is going to talk about what's happening on the web. I invented a product called Clip and Seal, and the reason that's relevant to you guys, a consumer product, is I'm going to be talking about making and doing stuff online and creating things. Anybody, have I given you Clip and Seal before? Any owners of Clip and Seal in the audience? It was really funny. We got one. I was at a party last night, and a guy remembered me from 10 years ago giving him one of these products. So a little consumer product, and the story behind this is when I came out of the dot-com bust, as I'm sure many of you, that seemed like a long time ago, especially in this kind of economy that's recovering, I needed something to do, and I'd always wanted to bring a product to market, and used my tech skills, my web skills, to make a product, invent it, bring it to market, and the story goes from there. That's how I got into blogging, wrote a book about that. Amazingly, the product flew in the space shuttle. It's been around the world. It's just a crazy story about making stuff, having passion, having a drive and a fire, and then seeing where that goes, and of course using the web to do that, which is mostly what we'll be talking about today. Also invented Kickstand, a new product. That's an iPhone holder. Anybody seen the Kickstand before? You seen me talk about it online? Who wants one? All right. I can't really see you, so here you go. There we go. There's one, and I got more up here. Here we go! All right, I don't want to put anybody's eye out, so be careful here. We got it. So also invented Kickstand, and again, I'm talking about consumer products because this is what we make, this is what my agency does, and then, of course, we use the web to communicate that and share it and build our business that way. So what have we been doing for the past 10 years? And it's amazing to me that it's 10 years. My colleague, Anil Dash, pointed out to me that I've been doing it that long. Was really independent manufacturing with social media. And we weren't even really calling it social media at that time. This was in the time before Facebook and Twitter and those type of things. But really getting out there, building stuff, and that's kind of a perspective I'm bringing from you, which is probably a little bit different than what you're hearing from other speakers today, is this perspective of craft online, a perspective of building great stuff, a perspective of enjoying what we're doing, and sharing that with you here at Mix today. Also publisher of Bike Hugger. Any Bike Hugger readers in the audience? Oh, we got one. All right, well, I have a Bike Hugger hat. I'm going to go this way. You ready? Here we go. Oh, nice catch. All right, so Bike Hugger is a blog that we built. Excuse me, my voice is booming there. And we do a lot of experimenting on there. We do a lot of technology stuff. I also have a mobile version of that in HTML5 I'll be showing you as we go through the production, and we'll get moving through the introductions. Of course, all the stuff, and more relevance to you is why I'm here, is we also do this with clients, and the stuff that we're making and talking about online, the skills that we're learning about and doing, we also, of course, share with clients. So we'll move through that quickly and get right into it. So the last time we met, did anybody see me speak last year about this stuff? All right, great. Did anything change from you in the last year when we talked? Did you take any of that home? Did you redo any designs from there? Any kind of big stuff? No? Okay. All right. Well, that kind of fell flat. I was hoping for a big finish with that one. All right. So last time I was here, we talked about is ordinary design. And what I'm thinking about in this conversation I've been having since South by Southwest the year before and this year is really kind of looking at 20 years in this industry. What we have done is really is made it all up. I mean, we really kind of created an industry out of nothing. HTML, I mean, I started doing HTML, XML, HTML, and working on ways of developing and creating stuff that was entirely done on the fly. And I would go into meetings and boardrooms and pitch stuff, and it was entirely making it all up. Now, I don't mean that I was making it up in the sense of I was just in there to get the dollar and be a consultant, but more we were just on the fly doing it. And I think that 20 years into this, it's now time to talk about what we can do about our craft and talk about what we do as designers and developers to kind of question what's going on. And where this talk comes from is a lament of mine where it seems that marketing has come rushing into social media and taken it over. And it's also, of course, also driven by, I believe, venture capitalists this time for the margins to be made. And it all seems to be about now, about turning the margin, monetizing the content, and seeing how much money we can make online. And of course, I'm not opposed to that. I've certainly built a business online, but I'm asking ourselves and designers and developers, as we've been in this career, mid-career, is this really what we want to be doing? Is there something else that we can be doing or kind of formalizing our craft and doing great stuff and making cool stuff? Anybody feeling that in the room too? Are you guys having the same lament, wondering what we're doing online? Right? Okay, a couple nods, okay. So ordinary design, what this was about, this talk, and I just kind of wanted to have a frame of reference where I was here last year, was looking at form and function, looking at other industries. Again, when we made up our industry 20 years in, we didn't really do a lot of borrowing from other industries and looking at like product design, industrial design, arts, also looking at architecture and looking at the way that they formalize and what they do. Now, I know that there's standards and I know that there's engineering standards and UX, but really looking at form and function, looking at simplicity, looking at building and solving problems. And one of the questions that I always ask is, if your user was to design your site, what would it look like? Probably not what it would look like you're doing today. And the context to the bike is that's a fixie bicycle. Some of you may ride fixies or know what those are. That product came out of bike shops where the industry wasn't giving messengers a product they wanted to ride. They needed a very simple bike. They needed one that wouldn't break, a bike without gears so they wouldn't break, and able to zip around in a city and deliver packages. They built these bikes out of parts bins entirely. Now, of course, years later, the bike industry is now doing that for them and giving them fixies. They're not as good as what they originally made, but that point really resonated with me. And what if we were to do that? What if we were to think about UX, user experience design, think about the way we develop and design in the sense of if we're building the most minimal thing possible and then adding on from there? And that's kind of the opposite of what I'm seeing online right now, which is when we started, we were struggling with browsers, we were struggling to get things done, we were trying to recreate print, we were trying to do a lot of different things. And what happens now, we have a mature tool set and we have a mature ways to build things, especially with Microsoft's tool, IE9, Mozilla, all these other browsers that we can use now, HTML5 of course, that we seem to have just gone over the top and throwing all of this stuff into design instead of looking at back in the day when we were doing HTML minimalism. Anybody remember HTML minimalism? I'm dating myself. Where it's like, that's all you could do? Remember that? And then that was like, hey, HTML minimalism, that's all we can do. Remember when you would do a border around an item was a table cell, 1 pixel wide, and you colored it black? All right, I'm seeing some nods. Hey, good. I was hoping you would connect with me on that. So anyway, so kind of back to that. I was at another conference called FITC, which used to be Flash in the Canon in Amsterdam last year. And I met this designer named Gregers, and we were talking about the same thing, where artists and designers are looking at the web now. There's tools also for them, where they can come in, and it's much easier for them to develop and design and kind of take this art approach, a craft approach to making great stuff. And so his quote was, the web is ready for an art approach, but we unnecessarily overcomplicate things and later end up with websites that look like Santa puked on a Christmas tree. Now, this, I think that's pretty good, Santa puked on a Christmas tree, especially when you look at maybe sites like Plixie or sites that are kind of rushing in to take advantage of the, or not take advantage, but rushing in to capitalize on photo sharing apps. And so there's so much weird stuff also going on the web right now, and I think it's coming from live search. I know Bing is addressing Google's live search with trying to clear up the results. But I have never seen more weird stuff on the internet. Anybody else just out there, bizarre sites, you're looking around? My wife always asks me, she looks over my shoulder like, well, how did you get there? I'm like, I have no idea. I was searching for a bicycle wheel and suddenly I'm on Xanax prescriptions. No idea. So I think that's also what's going on. And as we get through the presentation, I want to kind of urge an approach and a look back with our talent. You're here for a reason, designers and developers, to kind of look and say, what can we really build that we're proud of? What can we really build that is crafty and has an essence of just not throwing everything into it? Now, I suffer from the same thing, too, even on my site, BikeHugger. Hey, there's a Twitter widget. Or, hey, there's Twitter web intents now. I can put that on my site. Do we need to do that? And this continuous reductionism of not adding all this stuff. So Mike Gregers is a great artist. So here's a, I always love to get a morphine comment or morphine quote into a presentation. Thoughtful reduction. It's about simplicity and playing with dynamics. It's about subtraction more than production. Familiar with the band Morphine? Sound of Hands, right? So that's the simplest band possible. We've got bass, drum, singer, just a little bit, and they're really reducing what they do down to the elements and making great music of that. This also relates back to talking about what we do online and looking at other disciplines and looking at what we can do. Are we creating great music online? Are we creating great art? Are we creating great design? Are we just banging out a site so that marketing can get their message out? We can get hits, we can get traffic, and we can capitalize and monetize the content. So one of the things that also is concerning me with Facebook or Twitter is it seems that the next great natural resource for capitalists to plunder would be our content. Generally really concerned about that. I think it's because I've been around in the industry so long and so long in my career of being online that I know what kind of nefarious characters are out there. But I'm certainly spending a lot of time talking with people that aren't as tech as me about privacy on Facebook, wondering what Facebook's going to do next to my privacy and content. I'm seeing some nod ahead, so I think you guys are probably sharing my concern with that, especially when at least three times last year I got issued new credit cards from hackers getting into databases and, of course, recent email hacks. So a lot of stuff to be concerned about. When we did this talk at South by Southwest, again, I certainly want to hear from you guys, it kind of went in a different direction of people, what they were feeling online and what they were doing online too. So as we go through this, welcome to hear from you guys. As you notice too, I can talk about this stuff all day. And now, so of course that was The Web is Dead, which was a surprise to me, being most of my career online. The web is certainly changing. I think that's why you're here. And while you're here learning about this stuff today, learning the tech and hearing from me talk about it. And what I think really is happening in the regards of changing, of course, with HTML5, I love the fist, the HTML5 fist. I was wondering if you guys were really excited today. I was going to do a fist bump thing. But with HTML5, I think what's happening there is it's not so much about this, which is, I found this on Flickr. It's, you know, HTML5 is widgets, it's JavaScript, it's web apps, it's being able to access the camera from the browser, a bunch of different stuff. What I want to talk about with you is that I think it's more about an opportunity to make some really great stuff. I want to show you this site here, min.us. Have any of you guys used min.us? All right, let's take a look at that. We'll do a quick demo here. We'll get back to that guy in a second. Okay, so min.us is, minus.us, is a really interesting site. It's done in HTML5, and what they do is they allow you to drag stuff from your desktop, images, documents, what have you, onto the browser. Then they render it. You can title it. You can share it. And then, of course, up here in the right corner is buttons to share it on Facebook and share it on Twitter and so forth. And this is a street art project that we had made to share this stuff with you, kind of show back and forth. So here is the view of it. This would be the JPEG. Now, I can't actually drag and drop from my desktop with my iPad, but again, show you here online. What I was pretty impressed with about how responsive it was this is a giant image when I dropped it on there, and that took about 30 seconds for it to render onto the Minus website and then share it. So if you were an artist or a agency or doing photos, real quick way to drag your stuff onto a browser and share it online. So that's one demo there. And we'll go back to Keynote. Hello. There we go. So, and to make beautiful things like I showed you there, this is, of course, a shot I did in Hawaii of kind of the growth coming out from an old signpost. So also, I think, break free and look at the mobile audience, of course, which I'm even a bit taken aback by how mobile the audience is these days. And one that's on the move. This was a shot I did in South by Southwest. Also connected. Now, this is a pretty interesting story here. I have a device that turns your iPhone, anybody, if there's any cyclists in here, it turns your iPhone into a power meter for your bike. And so I was checking with my colleagues in the industry, also just kind of checking around who was doing HTML5, who was rolling it out, what was interesting to them about that, what they were going to do. Chris Matthews works for Specialized. I'm in the middle of a bike race on Tuesday this week. I'm descending down a hill at 40 miles an hour with about 70 guys, and I get this text message that comes up. Now, context to you is it says he has no current plans for HTML5. Okay, that's interesting. But I think I'm a little too connected when I'm getting messages during a bike race on my bike. After that, my wife called me to make sure I brought home something for dinner. So I think in that terms, this device needs to turn off the phone and the text messaging. Of course, the funny thing about that is you can't dismiss this unless you touch it. And I wasn't going to take my hands off the bars in a bike race, so I had to look at this every time I looked down at my power meter to see how fast I was going. I see this message from Chris Matthews, right? So in that regard, show of hands, are you guys rolling out HTML5? Are you doing that now? Is it important to you? Do you want to tell us what you're doing with it? So you got 4 or 5 sites you're rolling out now in HTML5 or by the year end? They're out now. Great. And what do you do? Web consulting stuff. Great. And you've done this for clients? Did the clients come to you looking for it, or you just gave it to them on your own? Right. We will have as I get through the presentation, I have a mobile site I'm going to show you that we just built two for. I wanted to come here and bring that to you guys. Anybody else in the room that's doing HTML5? Want to talk about that, what you're doing with your clients? Okay. All right. We've got one. So he said 2 years out for what they're doing, and it's going to, I'm sure, be the next big rev, the next big rebranding of the site. I know there's a few more out there, and I think to me it's just, of course, the next evolution and what we're going to be doing. But so when you rolled it out for the clients, you didn't make a big deal about it. It's just the code you gave them in your CMS? Right, okay, right, which is what we're rolling out as well. Also, I think this is a tweet I got as I was asking some questions about coming to this conference and presenting that even my mom surfs the web on her phone now. These are changing times. Absolutely true. So not only do I think we need to look at what we're doing now that we have these mature tool sets, but of course looking at this mobile audience, addressing the mobile audience, and how to adapt and do it. And I don't think it's this. Now, I'm only showing this as an example. I'm not up here. I don't want to be calling anybody out specifically. But there's nothing more frustrating, I think, than seeing things like this. I have on my Flickr photo stream, I have a running screenshot gallery of all the sites that aren't supported on the iPad. This would be Electra Bikes. You'd think that in a mobile demographic, in a mobile audience, they would be delivering stuff like this. Instead, of course, it says alternate HTML content should be placed here. This content requires Adobe Flash Player, get Flash. Great. I'll make sure to run right out there. When you go to get the app itself is just a PDF viewer, right? So I think what's also interesting in this regard in building stuff out is you've got cool little apps you can do, like Tipper. You guys seen Tipper before? pretty fun little app from Aaron. I don't know if he showed it, but Aaron's here speaking, Aaron Gustafsson. Just a quick little app, and what this does is, of course, give you tips. What I think is cool is he's made it into an anagram so that you can always look and make sure that no one has changed your tip, right? So it's the same numbers forwards, the same numbers backwards. You look through your receipts and go there. Now, he showed this to me 2 years ago. He just did it himself, and he banged out this quick page for it. Pretty cool stuff. All right, so I'm going to give you some context here, too, to Electra. Here would be the Electra app. Way to roll. Great. Not universal. GHG. Of course, and it's just a real catalog browser. All right? Not that exciting, at least specifically to me. All right, so we'll move on here. So back to the mom demographic, I think also my mom is surfing the web too, but she's also the only one leaving comments on my blog. So any of you else? I think there's a, there, you know, they talk about mommy bloggers. I think they could have mommy commenters. Seeming the only one who pays attention. Is anybody here publishing a blog and notice that as well too? Your comments are moving to Facebook and Twitter? Right. Definitely something that we're looking at and how to address, of course, mom, but also where to go as a publisher like I do myself and where to go to find those comments or move with the audience. Certainly isn't my idea of having my entire web presence ran through Zuckerberg's garden, but I think that's, you know, certainly where the audience is. I mean, one of the things about Facebook too is that I can just post a link in there. The traffic is crazy compared to what I do on my own site. You just can't ignore it, but that's a topic for another presentation. Of course, with modern browsers, this is from the 9 launch party at South by Southwest, which I think is funny. As they were here, they announced 10, and I told the guys last night, I'm just recovering from this party from South by Southwest, and you're announcing IE10. All right, so let's take a look at the Bikehugger Mobile, and kind of from the beginning of the presentation when I talked to you about this stuff, what's going on here is my concern, as I said, about the strange stuff that's going on online, and what I mean by strange is finding weird stuff, ending up at weird stuff, and kind of separate myself out from a techie and what I expect to find online, and view the site as one we want to create something cool, but also view it as a place where people can go that feels relaxed. You, like you step into an Apple Store, a Genius Store, any nice retail store, there's all this chaos going around out on the web. It's very noisy. It's like being in a mall, all this stuff, and then you kind of want to step into a site, feel relaxed, feel like these guys, I can trust these people, and of course then the goal and what we're going to be doing is selling you stuff. Not necessarily click-through ads, because it's a small publisher, that is a business that's tough to make a lot of money, of course, but also not really where we want to be going, because I think that turns people off. So let's look at this demo here. Hello, don't crash. All right, so here's the five-finger dandy king of Portland on my site. Any of you been to Portland, from Portland? This is just like this every day there. And we were out on a bike ride, and he has got five-finger shoes on, six-pack of beer, tweed jacket, and a bike. Pretty typical Portland. But what we're doing here on the site, of course, is pulling in from the main Bikehugger site, real simple layout, logo. Of course, we're looking at responsive design. Let's see how this moves. Which is going to adapt to the size of the window. You guys have probably seen that here from other presenters, but just show you that and real quick look and view. Calming, not a lot of ads. We also have our events here. This is built, a Maker DIY events that we do. We'll be doing one next month at Web Visions. And then, of course, our mobile socials that we do, which are rides for Bikehugger, and going here, but what's really important and what we didn't quite build out yet for you to see here today, let me go back here, is where I'm going with this is this store, which we pull from Amazon using Amazon Web Services, is we're going to be recreating this store here, which is where we sell our gear, sell our products, put it into the mobile site, and what I want people to do, pulling in from Amazon Web Services, is visit us, hey, cool, I'm going to go to Biker to view a photo of a funny picture, whatever, and our Danny King of Portland. And then while there, we have an affinity with them. They look at our gear, they purchase our gear. We've kind of shared with them a place where they can hang out. That's basically what we're doing. Now, I hope that all kind of makes sense in the lead up to this. Is that's the lament I had, is the web is so noisy, it's complicated, there's a bunch of stuff going on. And I think we need to take a learn from the Twitters and the Facebooks and the Flickers. They make it very easy for people to do stuff. The easier I think we make it for people to do stuff on our own sites, the longer the stay and the more that they'll do. Now, this is in terms of, you know, a blog that's producing products and creating stuff. A little bit different if you're Amazon.com proper, but I just kind of wanted to share that with you in looking at that. Any questions at this point? You guys want to share anything with me? All right. Okay. We'll keep moving on here. All these demos I'll have online too for you, as well as the presentation. I think I'm going to roll out this look myself, but my kids and my wife aren't into it, but it's pretty styling. All right, here's another demo. This is from Pinch Zoom. They're a Seattle firm. You may be familiar, may not. They're the Seattle firm that few people actually know about. They're very quiet, and they do work that millions of people use every day on their devices, including their iPhones and iPads and Android. And so they just rolled this out yesterday, Brian Fling, and let's take a look at it. So this is a responsive design mobile magazine prototype. Again, for the geeks in the room, we're doing this with HTML5, video, no flash needed. Let's make sure it doesn't load up and not crash here. Go full screen. Here we go. Boom. I think what's interesting here, of course, is beautiful layout, typography, responsive design, all that stuff kind of summarized in one place. If we were to do this in the Bikehugger style, of course, we would add in some stores and some areas to buy stuff. So that's the Pinch Zoom demo. Okay, I clicked on Associated Press by mistake there. We won't be reading the news during the demo. All right, so now we'll kind of get into the discussions of the bigger picture in here. As I've been talking about, you know, page clicks, people building sites just to get the click through. The reason I mentioned Plixi earlier, I don't know if anybody of you have used that, but I noticed some of my friends are, even outside of the tech industry, just in my Twitter feed. Notice people were using Plixi for Facebook and Twitter, taking photos, sharing them. So I clicked on a link, and they popped an under ad. And I was like, huh, people are still popping under ads? Really, we need to be doing that? And so I think in response to so much ads, so much monetizing and content out there, people are doing things like using Instapaper and also readability. Not only are they time-shifting their content, but they're also looking and viewing at it irregardless of how we've laid it out and what we've done. Any Instapaper users in the audience? Readability users? All right, so let's take a look at that. So here's the Instapaper ad, or app. What this does, of course, is take content and you save it to your own, you save it to their servers and they strip all the ads out of it, strip all the layout. That's interesting enough as a personal service. What is even more interesting is what Readability is doing over here with taking my content. Now, I'm going to set aside the, as a content producer, do I want Readability doing that for a second, just to look at a service that exists here solely to make it more comfortable to read and then stripping out what I've done in a response, I mean, not what I've done, but what other users have done with ads and such into a readable view. So this is great for the reader, great for the user. Don't know how it is for the publishers, but I think it's really also an interesting response to what's happening online. So much over-the-top design, so much ads, so much going on that a service exists just to strip all that out. So cool stuff. Another cool little demo here from Ben the Bodyguard, of course. Interesting. So are you guys time shifting your content too, using readability? Anybody? Viewing it your own way? So I'm doing that now, especially at night, reading the news. Of course, not on any real news schedule and reading it that way. All right, so transforming chaos into order, looking at getting out there, designing in a way that's cleaning stuff up, bringing it down much like readability is doing in Instapaper. And you guys can come on in. There's plenty of room. Of course, making life better is a true purpose of great design and kind of driving change. Does anybody want to share what they're doing online with their stuff right now? Anybody following this stuff and doing it? Brad, you want to talk about what you're doing online? Do you mind using the microphone? Yes. And I think we're live webcasting this around the world right now.
No pressure then, right?
No pressure, no pressure.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of work moving everything to all of our sites to CSS3, HTML5,
right.
Using live fonts, trying to do more fluid layouts. And the big problem that we've had is, and we were talking about this last night at one of the parties, is how to deal with multiple devices and screen sizes. And you touched a little bit about it on the presentation here, but
right.
You know, the thing we're finding is like there's practically kind of 62 character limit for how wide you want to read a column.
Right.
And so you know, where are the limits, I guess, where we design and flexibility meets, you know, kind of usability and kind of the ways that people want to actually consume and interact with content. Because
right.
I think that's one of the, you know, as you can see here when you're flipping your layouts, you know, you end up with a lot of white space and you've
right.
got to kind of figure out how to deal with that. And then compounding that, look at it on an iPhone, you look at it on a tablet.
Right.
Large desktop. So,
well, when I was preparing this presentation, I became following what was going on with responsive design in that word, and I began doing that and realized it was fluid layout. I remember being in discussions about static three columns versus one column fluid. You're right. So we're going to have a lot of white space over here. What do we do with that? Of course, that's where you could put a menu and stuff, and possibly some ads. But I think also what the challenge is in here is, how different is that from just allowing Safari to, or your Android device or your Windows mobile device, from rendering the site as it is? So here's the same site, and I've showed you, over the course of this presentation, three different views. Here's the regular browser view, we have the mobile iPad view, and then we have the readability view. And being able to work in all of that and realize that an audience is going and doing that. And I think it's even more, the mom demographic is even going and reading this stuff where, hey, if she can figure out that she doesn't have to look at all these ads, she could use readability or Instapaper, do that kind of stuff, probably going to do it. And by the way, speaking of ads, those ads on our site are our house ads for what we do. I'll kind of go back here. So, I mean, this view, and then we've got the Instapaper view here, right, all stripped out. Just big pictures, and then back to what I was showing you with the mobile site. Does anybody else want to share with their any questions about so far what we're talking about? Craft and stuff, doing stuff online? Maybe we need to do some exercising. Make you guys work. All right. So where this also of course popping over to Flickr here. All right, we'll pop back over here. So lo-fi marketing in a saturated medium, also kind of tie this back into what we're doing there with that term lo-fi marketing. What I mean by that is, again, I find the web now is so over the top, so much going on, that really, if you take this lo-fi marketing approach, which is what I'm trying to show you with BikeHugger, what we're doing with the mobile site, look at connecting with an audience where you're presenting them a safe place, a place where they could hang out, chill out, and not so in their face, not so, you know, click on my stuff, click on this ad, click on this pop-under ad, click on this service, do this thing. And I don't, probably less call to actions, but real more about affinity branding online, doing stuff online where you're representing what you're creating, making stuff, and sharing it with them in a manner that isn't so saturated. And I think that, as designers and developers, what we're doing, what we're talking about these days on the web is a way to disrupt. And where I'm getting that from also is looking at what Twitter, Facebook has done in politics, looking at what it done in stuff that, one, I wouldn't even ever have imagined happening. I was at South by Southwest when Twitter rolled out, and I dismissed it at that point as being the marginalia of the blogosphere. What could be more redundant and mundane than not only blogging about your cat, but then blogging or tweeting 140 characters about what your cat was doing at every moment as it was walking down the street. Never did I think that it was going to grow so fast or that it was going to have an impact beyond CNN, Egypt, and those things like that. So where I take that is the reason people defaulted to it is because it's so easy to use. When we were first doing blogging, it was a challenge. One, where we won is it was easy for VPs to update the homepage, right? So let's make it easy to update the homepage. Let's, you know, you can blog in. It's like getting onto Hotmail. You type here, you hit send, you send it out. It's got RSS, it's got comments, all that great stuff that blogging engines did. The pitch at that time was, been building CMSs all my career. CMSs always cost $300K, $500K. We can do this for $30K, build you a great site. It's easy, you can bang it out. The problem is people had post anxiety, especially working with larger clients, VPs, those type of people, that they just either they would write a novel in a post or they couldn't do it. So digest and being able to quickly type, quickly do stuff like in Twitter, I think is what made that such a killer app. So if you look at that in terms of marketing or look in terms of what you're doing now on your site, digest form, putting it together in a way that isn't putting out all of these messages at once and kind of condense it down. I mentioned earlier, I was talking about Facebook a little bit, and very reluctant for me to get onto Facebook because, one, I want the eyeballs on my site, I want the content on my site, I want the people there. Big challenge for me on what exactly to do, speaking of what exactly to do on the web, what exactly to do on Facebook. Well, as I mentioned, I think it's because everyone is in there. It's this like GeoCities was, or AOL, or any of those networks back in the day. They're on there. I can post a link in there, 3-4K impressions, 17 comments, 30 comments on stuff I didn't even write. I write a big, long, hour and a half post, my big thinking on using a device in a bike race that your wife can ask you to bring home dinner, and crickets, right? So adapting to that, and it's the same thing where people are in there, it's easy for them to do. How can you get them to come to your spot? And I think it's using techniques about lo-fi marketing, using ways and mannerisms to make it easy for people to do what they want to do. So that, in a sense, I believe is disruption, is rethinking what we're doing online and thinking about it differently. Also, one of the big things that's changing is, and I've been talking about this at other lectures, is it's not about search hits and impressions, but the social filter of friends and colleagues and being a trusted voice. So really, what once you get those people reading your stuff, you establish a rapport for them. I think with search engines and the web being so overwhelming, you have to establish that trust and make it. And that's really what we can do now with these new tools for these mobile audiences, is give them a way to be able to connect with us on their phones, on their devices, in various means, but also establish that trust that, one, you're not going to pop on your ad on them, or you're going to make them download an app or do a variety of things. So in this regard, is anybody working on this kind of stuff that you want to talk about or share? Maybe this is all so advanced that no one's ever doing this stuff yet. Anybody? All right. So I think, too, in this regard, looking at how to build out a site and how to build it or design it is with this trust idea in mind, this lo-fi marketing idea in mind, and kind of go from there. So any questions at this point? We have to have some interactivity. We got one over here. Great. Why don't you come on up to mind coming up to the mic? Great. It's because it's the recording. It isn't.
I guess I kind of bridge both worlds of product marketing and marketing.
Yep.
So I'm probably the evil empire as
yep.
well as trying to figure out how you monetize what you're doing.
Yep.
I mean, ISVs in the room, we're all trying to make something so we can actually eat by selling
yep.
something and make some money. And a lot of the folks that are looking at us who are the VCs or whatever, trying to say, I want to invest in that thing or keep you going for another mm-hmm. year or whatever, they are looking at hits. They are looking at impressions.
Correct.
How do you balance that? I mean, that's a struggle that I think we're all dealing with.
Absolutely. Great question. How to balance the impressions and the hits versus the trust in what I'm saying, which is, hey, let's make beautiful things. And again, my perspective is coming from the artist designer. We make stuff and we sell it online. We've been doing it for 10 years. I think that's a great balance is trying to figure that out. One, of course, is looking at, are those hits and impressions inflated? Can you trust them? Are they real? That's one thing, especially when people are doing, you know, popping out windows and under ads and that kind of stuff. It is about, of course, driving the traffic and driving that metric and, of course, proving that you can do it. But I think at the same time, when you're building that out and building the momentum behind it, you've got to start from a base of being a brand that people have an affinity to, and doing that with, instead of, you know, yelling at them all your messages, you're giving them something valuable that they want to buy. And I certainly don't want the takeaway from this talk to be about, hey, we don't have to make any money, and let's just make cool arts and crafts and start bead shows. Not really what I'm talking about, because I've certainly built a business, not only what I'm doing online with the craft, but also in consulting and talking with clients such as yourself, is that it's about more, I think, connecting, because there's such a diversity and so much stuff out there, and where's that audience going? It's moving around so much. As I mentioned about Facebook, I never expected that I'd have that big of an audience there for what we're doing, and then what do I do with it now that they're there, right? So, did that answer your question? Right. All right, any other questions about that kind of stuff? Come on up, that's what we're doing here. All right. I'll start asking questions of myself. So, are you, okay, thanks, I can barely see. Are you over there asking a question? Okay, come on up. Thank you. Please introduce yourself and fire away.
Well, I work in the insurance industry, so I'm just
yes.
sort of curious how you think industries like that will be influenced by this, because most of our messaging is internal. You
yep.
know, we're not public facing.
Correct.
But still, somehow we will be affected by this, or we should take advantage of this.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of curious what thoughts you might have on, say, insurance, automotive, banking, whatever, these large industries, which
right.
have a large society, but they're still internal. I'm just curious what you might think about that.
Well, I think it's a very good perspective. The question was, what do we do with that? And I have, being from Seattle, I have colleagues that work at PEMCO. I'm not sure if you guys would, everybody in the room has seen their ads, but they did a real kind of quirky ad campaign about we're like you, we're from the Northwest. Well, that didn't really compare to Progressive's flow, carpet bombing flows everywhere, right? I think my son's first crush is going to be on flow. She's everywhere. And in kind of informal conversations and casual conversations I've had with those guys, I think it's a big challenge, because social media still hasn't permeated into the old school straight up type of institutions. One of the people that we consult with is WEX. WEX is probably a company you've probably not heard of. They're often confused with a trucking company. Actually, they developed and invented the card fuel system. Remarkable. They do fleet management. They've beat the Fortune 500 every year through the recession, absolutely rocking, and went and talked to their board. They're trying out Twitter. They're doing different stuff. They're not really sure. And when I talked to them, a very similar talk to this, the main concern they had is they were watching the news. This was during Egypt and then Libya. And they're like, this is scaring the crap out of them. Not in the sense of, hey, you know, glad that revolutions are happening and people are becoming free, but in the sense of using Twitter, what did that mean to them? How do they wrap their head around what to do with this stuff? And what they found out was they looked at Twitter, even in a sense of just getting on there and using something like Radian 6, I believe it's called, looking at the chatter that was going on, looking at keywords, then reaching out to people and making sales, or connecting people that way, which is exactly what they did. But WEX is a pretty conservative, old-school company. It isn't really something that they're going to be getting out and putting on, you know, photos of funny people that they found in Portland. So it's a different kind of voice. But when we initially were working with Boeing way back in the day on Randy's Journal, Randy's blog, and other companies like that, what they found was once they started reaching out and talking to that audience, it was there. I think insurance is a real tough one because you're about rate quotes and about we have better value than the other one. What is the value statement? But the other industry that's really tough in this regard, I think, would be doctors and, of course, the medical community. I mean, if you try searching on Google for anything in the medical community, you get completely and totally overwhelmed. So I hope that answered your question. I can't see you anymore. Any more questions along that lines? We still got some time. We have about 16 more minutes, for 14 more minutes. All right. Okay, so let's take a little look at another site here. Also, I think Flickr is probably one of the most underrated social networks out there. I've met more cool people on Flickr than other networks. Here's another pretty cool site, too, I wanted to show you in regards to what's happening with the web, of course, and of what Apple's doing. Optimized, of course, for the iPad and the iPhone. But check this out, if you guys haven't seen this before. So I'm a Boy Scout when I travel. I have redundant systems. Not only do I have my presentation on my iPad, I have it on a USB drive, and of course, apparently this is a transparency projector. I guess I could have printed out transparencies and showed them this way. But this is a HTML version of the presentation I'm showing you right now. We can do this in iWork right here. Pretty cool. So if I could just upload that thing straight to there and show it off that way, which I think is pretty cool. All right, any other questions? While we're still here, we got some more time. Want to talk about a different industry or any more stuff? All right. So I think I'm going to go back to one of these topics here. I want to talk a little bit more about the mobile audience. So, in regards to what's happening with mobile, of course, when I'm out traveling, I haven't seen such an uptake in, usually, and I travel to Asia and do some different stuff with clients, in iPads and iPhones themselves. I haven't seen such an uptick. Are any of you guys developing iPad apps, iPhone apps now? Anybody want to tell me what you're doing? Want to share what you're? You can't? Oh, it's the secret stuff? That's the same with those guys from PinchZoom. They normally can't tell what they're doing. But I think also what's promising with what I showed you with that little the Tipper app was being able to quickly roll out stuff in HTML and not have to worry so much about hiring a developer and doing it that way. I mean, we've been struggling with the same thing with, you know, what do we do with a mobile site? What would we possibly do other than make a, you know, HTML5 so that people could view on any device, or do we go ahead and hire a developer and make an app? Because certainly what we don't want to do is an app like what I was showing you here with Electra, where, you know, this is really just a PDF viewer, not unlike Xenio, and not something that we're really that interested in. So I think that's also a challenge that, that people are looking at doing, how to build out apps for a website and have it make sense, and not just something that seems frivolous and not adding much value. All right, so I think we can get this wrapped up. If there's any more questions, I'm here. We've got about 10 more minutes. Let's fill it up. I'm ready. You want to talk about bike racing? We can do that too. Right. Yes?
How about sources for usability, principles, things like that for design? Do you have any good ones?
Absolutely. We can do those online too. I can share those with you. There's a great site. Let me pull it up for you right now. I had it in queue here before we left. Thank you guys all for coming. We'll see you later. One second, I'll pull that up for you. Do you have something? Yeah.
No, I just wasn't clear enough before. I mean, a lot of time I think the social network would be, but sometimes it has to be internal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's what I was trying to ask before. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Because sometimes in an insurance company or a bank, you know, there's 50 people working on it for 6 months.
Yep. Yep.
And this could all be great for us, but we can't show it to the public.
That's correct. Well, I think in that regard, what we had happen was often in corporate environments and communicating that way, generally if you're going external and outward, it's usually a maverick or a VP that wants to make their bones or wants to make their empire in the company. Right, that's atypical, definitely. And we've done a lot of work, of course, I can't share it with you, but we've done a lot of work internally as well, including the medical community, with giving them, at the time, people were excited about wikis and excited about using social networks inside just to try to break through the logjam. And mostly what that was about was getting out of email and trying to break through the being able to find anything online. I mean, we had one client that we developed a blog just specifically because they couldn't find anything on their intranet and being able to develop that way. So I think internal communications are where that can start, break free, understand that they can go that way, and then come out. Also, I think it's Jabber now that people are using internal. Now, most of my work is external clients, and actually I'm not in a corporation myself, but go from there. So I'm here to talk. If we have any more stuff, guys, let's, yeah. Yep. Yep. Let me keep talking. I'm going to pull up a different slide. Right. Correct. Well, that's one thing I'm struggling with right now in showing you these sites that I was showing you the mobile site that we created to bring here today, is what difference does that make between my regular site? Okay, what I'm saying is, hey, we should offer a calm place, a place where you can hang out with us. We're sharing funny photos from our travels in Portland or whatever, but how different does that need to be, and what do I need to tailor it? And I think we're all just kind of figuring that out, right? And figuring out what tone do I have to have? Am I in all of these different places? Because a real challenge, I think, right now for people that are doing online stuff is what channels are you in? You're omnipresent in all of them. How can one possibly do that? You've got social networks, Flickr, Facebook, Twitter, your blog, your corporate website, your personalities. Where all do you tailor all of those messages? Huge challenge. And what we're trying to do is create one location, being on the blog, have it work in different viewing environments, and then also what we do is not do anything robotic on Twitter and not do anything robotic on Facebook, right? Because one, people ignore it. They can tell it's coming from Twitter feed or from a robot and won't respond to it. People want to connect with you as the personality. the big challenge, I think, and also that, that other question about internal, is who is the face or who is the voice of the company? So Bikugger and the things I do, obviously it's me and the people that, that work with me, but a large company, who is, when you're on the Starbucks Facebook page, who is that? What is that persona?
It's exactly. It's easy when it's
correct.
Because Flo becomes the face of the company.
Correct. Correct. Well, what I think what's interesting, it's timing out, is in that regard, considering that, oh, I know why, it's because I'm not in, in Keynote. Let's go back over there and I'll pull up a slide so it doesn't keep popping out. All right, so what, speaking of 20 years in the industry and speaking of blogging now for quite a few years, doing what we've been doing for 10 years, we're still finding what you just said, is that, that it's still as disruptive as the medium is. It's not that disruptive in the boardroom yet because, one, people are either afraid or they're not doing it or they don't want to do it because the lawyers are involved. And what we said when we were working with, I mean, back in the day when I was at Microsoft, it was the Channel 9 time and the work we did with Boeing and others, was don't blog anything that you're going to get deposed for. Set out these rules, and anybody, when the work we did with Intel, anybody that was going to blog on the Intel Blog Network had to have legal training and get out there and have to go through all the stuff to be even able to talk about being online. What they realized at that point was there was too much of a logjam to possibly keep up with the pace of publishing online to be able to get stuff out, that they had to remove the lawyers and had trusted bloggers that they could put out front. A huge thing that you never hear about in regards to social media and social networks is the amount of time that it takes in that regard, and also the amount of, you can't keep pace with it. Trying to keep pace with the with Twitter and Facebook is a lot. People that, that blog full-time or do this stuff, that's all they do just to be able to keep up. Very unrealistic, I think, for a company themselves to be able to do that without a team. An example would be the Seattle PI has a blog locally. They have a real problem with their comments. Their comments just go all over the place. As you know, any topic online, especially politics, create a lot of hate and a lot of stuff like in forums. They don't do anything. They have stopped policing it entirely. One, budget reductions. They nearly closed. They shut the paper down. They can't. They don't have enough staff to read every comment and filter it out. And people, if they ban, you know, the block the IP or they block the email, they just come back in another way. So that's really an interesting, that really struck me as, wait a second, so you would rather have the traffic, obviously, have the people coming, looking at the, running the metrics and all that, then be able to make sure that someone isn't saying something racist. Which I think is the same thing on YouTube. YouTube amazes me that it is such a vile place, but it has all that traffic. I mean, I'll post a video of a wheel and someone will come in and call me a Nazi. It's just absolutely bizarre. And I've never understood why YouTube didn't do anything to filter that stuff out. But then, a 16-year-old girl gets a video with a stupid song and has 38 million views, right? So it's hard to really tell. And I hope when I was mentioning WEX earlier, I was hoping that would connect. They're the same way. They're like, we get it. We understand what this medium is. We've been watching it long enough. But what are we going to do on it, and how do we keep up with it? These are old school. These are like baby boomer old school board guys, right? So I think it's a huge challenge. I got 35 seconds to go. Yes, sir. Yep. Yep. I think the way that what we're doing now, I can speak from experience and who I'm talking with and the clients that we're working with, is we really do a lot of product placement. And we're really applying the same thing that happens, has been happening for forever in the advertising medium of television and radio, where we plug products, place products into the info stream without any ads. So that's one way to do it. I like that. They're gonna pull me off with a hook sound. So I hope that answers your question. The one way that we do it is, of course, people are gonna wanna show my product, I wanna see it, but when we work with clients, we tell them, get us the product, we're gonna disclose to our readers what we're doing with the product, but we flow it into the info stream. There's so much information coming out of us Twitter, Facebook, Flickr, whatever, suddenly the specialized VIN shows up and we're talking about it in real terms like we talk, not marketing language, far more effective. That's what we're doing. Does that answer your question? So I think we're done. We're done? Good time? So thanks for coming, everybody. I appreciate you staying. I'll be hanging around here for a while if there's any more questions, and I hope you enjoyed what we had to say. It was a little bit different, but I want to bring a little bit different message. So thanks.